Suggestion causes a little excited ripple around the circle. Faces brighten. People want to believe this. Danny's suggestion is a solution that doesn't require a murderer, and everybody would desperately like that to be true. But there is a problem. Two problems, in fact. It is a solution that doesn't explain Elliot's or Annie's deaths. It does not hold up for a minute, as they would realise if they thought about it, but I can see they are not thinking. Speaking up in front of the others makes my stomach curdle, but I have to say something. I can't not. Ava was on that slope, I say reluctantly. I saw her too. Every pair of eyes in the room turns to me. It feels like they are boring into me. My cheeks flush. I want to sink through the floor.
What did you say?
It is Miranda, her voice almost accusing.
I said I saw Ava too. I was in the bubble lift on the way down, and I saw her skiing as well. Further up the slope than Annie did, but I saw her. She was on La Sorcière. Annie wasn't mistaken. She must have been talking about something else.
And you didn't think to mention this before?
I trail off.
Not something else, someone else,
Danny says flatly. And there is a moment's silence. Everyone's gaze travels around the room, going from one person to another. We are all realising the same thing. If Tiger is right, there are very few people Annie could have been talking about. Topher folds his arms.
Your move, his expression says to Miranda.
Tiger, are you sure?
Miranda says. Now there is a note of desperation in her voice.
Are you absolutely certain Annie said her?
I'm sure,
Tiger says stubbornly.
There is a long, long silence.
Miranda stands up and walks out of the room.
I don't care,
she shoots over her shoulder as she leaves.
I don't care what Annie said. There is one person in this room who had a motive for Ava's death. One person. Stop pretending that isn't the case.
And then there's nothing but silence and the clack-clack of her heels on the spiral staircase as she runs up to her room. After she has gone, there is an extremely awkward silence. Topher is leaning against the mantelpiece, angry and flushed. Rick looks like a man being ripped in half. Tiger is slumped with her hand over her face. Erin and Danny look intensely uncomfortable. Carl breaks the silence.
Yeah, but she's right, isn't she?
His voice seems to break some kind of spell, and Topher pushes himself upright and turns for the door.
Fuck! This,
he says.
I'm not doing this anymore.
What do you mean?
Rick turns to stare at him, puzzled.
You're not doing what?
This. I'm not sitting here like fucking frogs in a pressure cooker. I didn't kill Ava, no matter what Miranda and Carl want to believe, and I certainly didn't fucking kill my best friend or our PA. And I'm not hanging around waiting to prove it by being the next person killed. I'm out of here. I'm going to cross-country it down to Saint-Antoine-le-Lac.
You're mad,
Rick says instantly.
The piste is ripped to shreds. There's trees and rocks everywhere. And look at the weather, for God's sake. You'll freeze to death.
Topher shrugs. There is a short pause.
You're mad,
Rick repeats desperately, and then...
I'm coming with you.
Erin. Snoop ID, Little Mai. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers, 10. It's almost midday, and the group has spent the past hour or more discussing Topher's decision and going back and forth over the stupidity or not of the idea. Topher, for his part, is packing determinedly. So far, he's got an avalanche pack, water, a torch, some energy bars, a rope, and he's looking for a shovel, though I'm not sure how he imagines he's going to use it. If there's another avalanche, a shovel in his pack isn't going to save him. But if he doesn't manage to get down to Saint-Antoine before nightfall, he's going to need some kind of shelter, so maybe it's not such a bad idea. There's worse survival tactics than a snow shelter. Above all, though, he seems set on simply getting away, no matter how stupid or risky the plan. Miranda's statement has unleashed something people were refusing to face before. Topher is the person who has benefited most from Ava's death. He's just been handed everything he wanted. Sole control of Snoop. Rick and Liz, on the other hand, stand to lose millions of pounds if the buyout doesn't go through. And I can't imagine Miranda and Carl will survive this holiday with their posts intact. Whatever the facts, it's difficult to believe they can continue working for Topher after basically accusing their boss of murder. There are some things you don't come back from. So I can understand why he feels he can't stay here, just as Inigo felt he had no choice but to leave when the group turned on him. What's more surprising is that Rick seems set on going too, though I don't honestly know how Topher feels about this. He has tried to dissuade Rick, but it's hard to deny that two people will stand a better chance than one. It's treacherous going out there, and if one person sprains an ankle, they'd be pretty much dead without a mobile phone. At least with two, you have a chance of sending for help. By 12:15, Rick and Topher are standing in the foyer looking at the large-scale map of the resort that we have pinned to one of the walls and discussing potential routes when Tiger comes down the spiral stairs. She's wearing her snowboarding gear and she's looking determined. "I'm coming with you too," she says without preamble. Topher frowns.
"Tiger,
no. Don't try to stop me. I'm as good a boarder as you and I'm better than Rick." She says it with no false modesty. "And I can't stay here after what..." She gulps, stops, tries again. "After what happened..." But she can't finish. I can see that beneath her oversized jacket, her small fists are clenched. Rick and Topher look at each other and I'm not sure what they're thinking. Tiger is still the person who had the best opportunity for killing Annie. That part is undeniable. The two of them were locked in a room together and one of them didn't wake up. But she was also pretty firm about Annie's final words, words that deflected suspicion from Topher, which seems like strange behaviour for a murderer. Plus, Rick and Topher are two big, strapping blokes, each of them probably weighing almost twice as much as Tiger by themselves. If Tiger were the killer, it seems unlikely she could overpower one of them, let alone both. On the other hand, and I can almost see Rick and Topher calculating this in their heads, if one of them is a murderer, isn't it better to have a third-party witness? The surrealness of this reasoning strikes me again, and I stifle a short, hysterical laugh and then clap my hand over my mouth.
"What did you say?"
Rick says, turning to me, frowning, and I shake my head. Tears are leaking out of my eyes, but I can't tell why.
"Nothing. I'm sorry. Ignore me." "Fine, you can come," Topher says brusquely to Tiger, making up his mind.
"Rick!" We all turn at the voice from above and see Miranda coming down the spiral staircase too. Her expression is pale but set. Rick's face falls.
He knows what's coming, and he's already shaking his head.
Rick, you can't do this, Miranda says. Her brittle voice seems to crack. She takes his arm, her fingers digging into his jacket. This is incredibly stupid.
Miranda, I'm sorry,
Rick says.
His deep voice is very quiet. He's trying to keep this between the two of them, but it's impossible with the rest of us just feet away.
I don't want to go, but we can't stay here and get picked off one by one like this. I think Topher's right. We have to get to the police.
But not with him,
she's whispering, but the acoustics in this room are excellent. I can hear her, so I'm pretty sure Topher can.
Please, please, I'm begging you, don't go with him. I'm frightened you won't come back. We'll go together. I'll get my skis on.
You're not a strong enough skier,
he whispers back.
Please, darling, believe me. I would if I could, but it's just too...
I won't stay here without you.
Oi, what about the other chalet?
We'll turn to see Carl, standing in the living room doorway, his hands in his pocket. Miranda frowns, thrown off course.
What other chalet?
That chef, Danny, wasn't he going to hike out to some chalet earlier, before all this started?
I nod. He was, I say. Chalet aux Montagnes. It's a big chain chalet and much more likely to be occupied than the two closer ones, but it's a trek, a good 3 or 4 miles up the valley. That's why he left it until last.
See?
Carl says triumphantly.
3 or 4 miles, that's nothing. You could walk that in a morning.
I wouldn't call it nothing, I say cautiously. For a start, you wouldn't be walking it. You'd have to snowshoe, and that's a really different skill. What with the avalanche, not to mention almost a week of uncleared snow, I'd say you'd be looking at a good 3 hours snowshoeing. Maybe more if you'd never done it.
I reckon it's a better bet than the resort,
Carl says flatly.
I mean, what's that, 15 miles and steep as fuck? You lose a ski on that boulder field, you're fucked.
I'm not going to lose a ski,
Topher snarls.
For a start, I'm a boarder, not a skier. Second, I'm halfway competent. And anyway, what happens if we get to the chalet and it's shut up? We're back to square fucking one. At least we know the resort has people who can help us. No, I've made my choice and I'm sticking to it.
His irritation doesn't rub off on Carl, who just gives a shrug.
Maybe it's not a choice.
There's a long, puzzled silence.
What are you saying?
Rick asks at last.
I'm saying it's not an either-or situation. Look, the strong skiers, that's you, Toph and Tiger, try to make it to the village and raise the alarm there. The rest of us will try for the chalet. Whoever makes it through will send a party to rescue the other lot.
It's actually not a bad plan. I can see Topher and Rick looking at each other, thinking it over, coming to the same conclusion. At last, Topher nods like Carl was asking him for permission, though I don't think he was. We are long past the point where Topher has that kind of authority.
Yeah, okay, he says, a little sulkily, acceding to the inevitable.
Miranda?
Rick says, and she gives an unhappy shrug.
I guess. If you won't take me with you, it's better than sitting here.
Liz?
Carl says.
How about it?
For a second, Liz just blinks, like she's startled to be referred to by name. For a moment, she does nothing at all, like a frightened animal frozen in the headlamp beam of Carl's attention. Then she cracks the tiniest smile and gives a shaky, uncertain nod. For the first time in a few days, I feel a flare of hope inside my chest.
Maybe it will be okay. Maybe it will really all be okay.
Liz, Snoop ID Anon 101, listening to Offline, Snoop Scribers 1. After so many days reacting to events, it feels good to have a plan. Up in my room, I struggle into my faded blue jumpsuit and pull on ski socks and gloves. My helmet and goggles are down in the locker room. I will put those on when we are ready to go outside. One glance out of the window tells me that sunglasses won't be needed. It's midday, but almost dark. The sun is barely filtering through the clouds, and the wind is howling like something trying to get in. When I am dressed, I feel, for the first time in a couple of days, hot and puffed out. It is strange to feel too warm again after the growing chill of the chalet. I let myself sink to the bed and catch my breath for a few moments. Now that it is almost over, I can look back on the living nightmare of the last few days. How has it come to this? How? Of all the ways I was expecting this week to go, I never imagined this unfolding horror. In my mind, I tick them off, a macabre school roll call. Ava, dead. Elliot, dead. Inigo, gone, and goodness knows what has happened to him. Did he make it to San Antoine, or is he lying frozen with hypothermia in some isolated shack far from the piste? Annie, dead. There's just six of us left. Me, Rick, Miranda, Carl, Tiger, and Topher. Topher. It always comes back to him somehow. Because it is true what Miranda said. However much people try to ignore the fact, Topher has a very strong motive for Ava's death. In fact, he has the best motive out of everyone here. The thought should make my heart hurt. Topher, who hired me out of a pool of slick, skinny graduates and gave me my first chance. Topher, who stood up for me, stood by me, made sure I got those shares that have hung around my neck like an albatross ever since. Topher, the reason I am here. And maybe it's because of that last one, but my heart doesn't hurt. I feel nothing. Nothing at all. Because Topher is the reason I have been dragged into this, into something I never wanted and never asked for. Topher and Ava between them, pushing me, pulling me, manipulating me like a chess piece in their battle for control of Snoop. I know what Topher thought when he gave me those shares. He thought that he was handing over 2% of the company to someone he could control. I was his insurance policy, in case Ava and Rick ever ganged up on him. A way to tip the balance in his favour. Topher thought I would be like putty in his hands. Soft. Malleable. Pliant. He thought that because of the kind of person he saw. Someone meek and quiet, dressed in bad clothes, who never said boo to a goose. In Topher's world, people are hard, polished shells, their shiny exterior hiding the inadequacies and anxieties inside. But Topher made a mistake. He didn't understand that some people are the other way round. But Ava, I think Ava did understand that. And perhaps it's what killed her in the end.
Erin, Snoop ID Little Mai, listening to
offline. Snoop Scribers, 10.
It is 1 o'clock. Everyone apart from Liz is gathered in the lobby wearing their ski gear. Topher's party is holding snowboards, skis and poles. Miranda and Carl are equipped with a pair of snowshoes each. And my heart is thumping. Thumping because maybe this is it. Maybe this long nightmare is finally over. Surely one group will be successful.
What on earth is Liz doing?
Miranda says irritably. She has been on edge ever since Rick told her she couldn't go with him down to the village. The two-party idea makes sense, and she knows it does, but she would still prefer to be with Rick, and I can see the way her gaze keeps stealing across to him.
I'm here,
says a timid voice from the top of the stairs, and we all look up to see Liz standing at the top of the spiral staircase. She is wearing the outsized blue jumpsuit she had on the first day and is clutching her ski poles in one mittened hand. A bobble hat is balanced on top of her head and her glasses are misted. She looks hot and sweaty, but like the rest of us, relieved to be finally doing something. She starts down the stairs and then it happens. Something, a pole, a trailing strap, catches in the banisters and she stumbles. Her socked feet go out from under her. One hand grabs for the handrail, but the mitten has no grip and the wooden rail simply slides out from under the plasticky fabric. As we watch, helpless, Liz tumbles forwards down the spiral staircase with a series of sickening thumps. And then she lands at the bottom, ominously quiet.
Liz, Snoop ID Anon 101, listening to Offline, Snoop Scribers 1.
I can't breathe. I lie there, panic pulsing through me, trying to inhale and failing. I can hear myself making little strange gasps, like a fish stranded out of water. Liz! It is Erin. She comes hobbling over. Her face is white. She crouches beside me.
Liz! Oh, God, are you okay?
I can't answer. I can't get my breath enough to say a word. I make a motion, half nodding, half shaking my head. Am I okay? I'm not sure.
Fucking hell.
Carl falls to his knees next to me.
Liz?
He turns to the others.
Well, she's alive at least. Can you speak, Liz?
He says it very loudly, like I am hard of hearing. I think she's just very badly winded, Erin says. She strokes my forehead. I resist the urge to pull away. I am not sure if I could, anyway.
It's okay. Don't fight it. Just try to breathe slowly. I'll count with you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and in. And now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and out.
With Erin counting, slowly and rhythmically, I manage to take a breath. Then another. At last, shakily, I sit up.
Are you okay?
Erin asks again.
Does anything hurt?
My knee, I manage. I pull up the leg of my jumpsuit, but I had forgotten my leggings underneath. You can't see anything, but my knee feels hot. When Erin squeezes it gently, a pulse of pain flares up my leg and I flinch.
Fucking hell,
Rick says shakily.
I thought for a minute there.
He stops. He does not need to spell it out. I know exactly what he thought. I thought it too for a second. For a moment, we were almost five. Erin helps me to stand up. I find I am shaking.
Can you walk?
Erin asks.
I nod and hobble a few steps. Behind me, Carl's face is grim.
Well, you can't manage 4 miles in snow, can you?
He says. It's not a question.
So, we go alone? Miranda says.
Now it is Rick's turn to look uneasy. I know what he is thinking. 3 people should be safe together, but if Carl is the murderer, he is sending Miranda out into the snow alone with a killer.
I don't know,
he says. But Erin cuts in.
Danny will go.
Erin. Snoop ID, Little Mai. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers, 10.
Danny will go.
The words are out of my mouth before I have time to consider them, but as soon as I've said them, I know they make sense. It's not just about the maths of sending 2 people out into the snow together. Danny knows the way. Carl and Miranda don't.
What?
The voice comes from behind me, and I turn round to see Danny standing there looking mightily pissed off with me.
Erin, could we have a word, please?
He says tightly.
In the kitchen?
With a glance at Liz, who is white as a sheet and looks like she might keel over at any second, I follow him. And when the screen door swings shut behind us, Danny lets rip.
Are you out of your fucking mind? We went over this. I am not leaving you here with a broken ankle and a psycho on the loose.
I didn't mean just you, I say, trying to keep my voice low. It feels weird to be articulating our suspicions like this within earshot of the group. I meant the 3 of you should go. It's obvious, isn't it? I can't believe we didn't think of it before. Carl and Miranda have no idea where they're going. Even with a map, the routes are covered up by the avalanche. It's more likely than not they'll end up wandering off into the forest and get lost. You know where the chalet is. You can speak French. And you know how to snowshoe. It makes complete sense. They stand a much better chance of getting there and back if you're with them. I'd be seriously worried about them setting out alone.
Huh.
Danny looks taken aback at this. He can see the logic in my argument.
So, what, you and that Lizbird stay here by yourselves?
That's right. I mean, think about it, Danny. She's not going anywhere with that twisted knee. She's as lame as I am. And she was never really a realistic prospect for the killer anyway. She can't ski. We know she was stuck on the bubble lift when Ava actually died. And out of everyone here, she has one of the strongest motives for not wanting Ava dead. I mean, who knows what might have happened to everyone else in a buyout situation. They were probably going to lose their jobs at the very least. But Liz had no job to lose. And she stood to gain several 1,000,000 quid if the deal went through. That's a pretty strong counter-argument.
Yeah, I can see that,
Danny says slowly. Please, I say. I put my hand on his arm. Danny, please. Get Miranda and Carl to that chalet and get word to the police about what's happening. We can't afford another death. And I don't trust Carl and Miranda by themselves.
All right,
Danny says, making up his mind.
You're probably right. I'll go and get my gear, but you lock up when we're gone and don't answer the door to anyone except me or the gendarme. You got that? I don't care if Topher comes crawling back with a sob story of Rick leaving him in the snow. I don't care if Tiger snaps a binding. You don't let them in, any of them. And fuck knows what happened to Inigo, but I don't like the idea that he might be prowling around out there in the snow, waiting for everyone else to leave.
His words are like an unwelcome splash of cold water in the face. Inigo. We had assumed,
I had assumed that Inigo was out of the picture now. What if he's not?
Uneasiness shifts in my belly, but I put my chin up. We'll be fine.
Even if someone does show up, which I doubt, there's two of us and one of them, and they'll be outside in the snow, freezing their tits off.
Yeah, well,
Danny says darkly,
just you stick to that, okay? I know you. Someone will turn up, claim he's crawled 8 miles through the snow with frostbite, and you'll open the door because you're soft. Don't be starting up with the bleeding heart crap. Put yourself first.
I feel a sharp twinge of guilt, even though I haven't done anything, because Danny's right. That is exactly the kind of thing I would do. I try to imagine myself sitting in the warm, dry chalet while Inigo or Topher or even a complete stranger died slowly outside the front door, begging to be let in, and I just can't see it happening. I would crack. I would let them in. I know I would.
We'll be fine, I say again, though my voice is a little bit less convincing, even to myself.
Just go and get back as fast as you can.
Liz. Snoop ID Anon 101. Listening to Offline. Snoopscribers 1.
After the others are gone, Erin locks and bolts the front door. She fixes it in place as securely as she can, but it is not perfect. It has been warped by the avalanche so that the bottom lock doesn't fasten properly and melted snow is leaking through the gap, but the lock at the top works. Then she checks the ski entrance, which is still buried by snow, and the door that used to lead out to the swimming pool.
All safe and sound, she reports
as she comes back into the lobby. Her smile is bright and slightly artificial. There is something a little bit oppressive about the silence now. It weighs heavy and feels like it is pressing in on us.
How are you feeling?
Okay, I think. I rub the back of my head where I hit it on the banister and touch my knee gingerly through the padded salopettes. I wrenched it, but it is not as bad as I feared. Now that the first shock is wearing off, I can put my weight on it. Still a bit wobbly, but I think it was mostly shock.
What a pair,
Erin says. She grins at me, the scar on her cheek twisting with the movement.
Me with my ankle, you with your knee, couple of lame ducks.
I know. I try for a laugh, but it doesn't sound quite right. I reckon it'll take Danny's party about 6 hours to get to O'Montagna and back. And who knows about Topher's lot? I have no idea how badly bashed up the piste is. If it's not easily skiable, they could be days. I nod. Clambering through waist-deep snow in ski boots is no joke. I know that.
So, I think we have at least 6 hours before we need to start worrying,
Erin says.
The question is, how are we going to kill the time?
Erin. Snoop ID, Little Mai. Listening to Offline. Snoopscribers, 10.
It's gone 3. After the others left, Liz and I ate a meagre lunch of lukewarm tinned soup. The bread was almost inedibly stale, but dipping it in the soup made it soft enough to chew, and we have been playing cards ever since. The chalet is completely, eerily silent. I never realised before how stifling silence could be. Perhaps because Personnage is so rarely quiet. It's always full of the noise of guest footsteps, playing children in the school holidays, the clatter of skis, the sound of Danny in the kitchen. While Topher and the others were here,
There was the constant jangle of someone playing music and later the babble of conversation. Even on changeover days, there is the hum of the Hoover and the noise of Danny's radio. Now, there is no music. Our phones are long since dead. The TV and radio sit silent with no electricity to power them. There is no sound at all, apart from the crackle of the logs in the burner. Even the patter of snow outside is virtually silent behind the triple glazing. Every few minutes I glance out of the window, checking the weather. It isn't great. There's no point in sugarcoating that. It's not as bad as it could have been. The wind has dropped, at least. But the snow is still falling, and cloud has come rolling down the mountain, enveloping the chalet in a thick, frozen grey blur, so that visibility is down to a few feet. I am profoundly relieved that Danny is with Miranda and Carl and knows where he's going. Even so, I'm starting to wonder whether he will be able to make it to O Montagna and back again before night falls in earnest. Maybe Liz and I will be stuck here alone overnight. It's not a completely comfortable thought. As if echoing my unease, Liz flexes her fingers nervously. Crack, crack, crack. The noise is like gunshots in the silence, and it puts my teeth on edge. How did you get involved with Snoop, anyway? I ask. I pitch my voice slightly too loud, trying to cover up the sound. Liz shifts in her chair. I can't tell if her knee is hurting her or if it's the question that's made her uncomfortable.
I just applied for a job. They were a start-up at the time, just Topher, Ava, Elliot and Rick. I was their first secretary, I suppose you'd call it, PA, maybe. They didn't have the weird job titles in those days.
She falls silent again, as if the uncharacteristically long speech has exhausted her. I'm about to ask another question, when, to my surprise, she speaks again.
I miss it. I miss them. It was fun. For a while.
What made you leave? I ask. But that's when the shutters come down again. Her face turns blank and unreadable.
No reason,
she says, looking down at her cards.
I just wanted a change.
In the silence, I pick up a card and put down a king. Liz picks it up, frowning. I have put my foot in it, but I'm not quite sure how. I think of Danny's remark about the incestuous nature of Snoop's workforce, Ava sleeping with Inigo, Topher with Annie. Haven't they heard of me too? Did something happen between Liz and Topher? Something she is running from? But no, I don't think it's that. Of all the people in the company, Liz actually seems to get on best with Topher. And Topher, for all his faults, doesn't seem like the kind of man to pressurise an employee into something sexual. Whatever was between him and Annie, I got the impression it was consensual. But Annie ended up dead. The words are a whisper in my ear, an uncomfortable reminder of the fact that Liz and I are not alone in this chalet. There are two bodies upstairs with us. And somewhere out there in the frozen peaks, there is a third, Ava. And maybe a fourth, because who knows what happened to Inigo after he stumbled away into the snow. It feels like death is closing around us. It feels like Liz and I could be next. But no, I shake myself. This is morbid, ridiculously so.
Your turn, Liz says. And I look down and realise I have no idea when she made her move.
I pick up a card from the draw pile at random and discard without really thinking about strategy.
Rummy, Liz says,
and she lays out a run of 4 spades and 3 kings.
I force a smile.
Well done! Liz picks up the cards and deals again. I pick up my hand. It's a good one, 3 of a kind straight off. But I can't keep my mind on the cards. Ava's deaf, I say cautiously, and Liz looks up. She's still wearing her oversized blue jumpsuit, and I can't really blame her. Even with the wood stove, the chalet is now painfully cold, and I can see my breath when I speak. That... it must have been quite a shock. I suppose the buyout won't go through now. How did it feel, having all that money and then having it snatched away? I'm half expecting Liz to tell me that it's none of my business, and it's true, it's not. But we've gone long past the point of guest and chalet girl, and we both know it.
It felt strange, Liz says slowly.
The firelight is reflecting off her glasses, making her expression even harder to read than usual, but I can see her forehead crinkle as she frowns.
Did you resent Topher?
I ask.
For quashing the sale? I think I would have.
But Liz is shaking her head.
I never really wanted the money, to be honest. It never felt like mine. It was such a stupid sum. And for what?
Being in the right place at the right time, I guess,
I say with a laugh. But Liz doesn't smile back. She shakes her head again, though I'm not sure what she's denying.
I can't blame her, though. Whatever place we have ended up in, all of us, it's definitely not the right one.
Silence falls again. I look at my watch. 10 minutes to 4. God, could this day pass any slower? Suddenly, I can't sit any longer, and I stand, putting my weight carefully on my swollen ankle, and make my way over to the long window overlooking the valley.
It is almost completely dark outside now, but the chalet is dark too, and so I don't need to cup my hands to my eyes as I look out across the snow, wondering where Danny and the others are. Have they made it to O Montagne yet? And what about Topher and his party?
I wish, harder than I've ever wished for anything before, that I had a phone with just a single bar of reception, or a two-way radio, or anything. Some way of communicating with the outside world.
4 aces,
says Liz over my shoulder, and I sigh and turn back to the darkening room.
Liz, Snoop ID, Anon 101, listening to Offline, Snoopscribers 1.
It is 3:58. We are on our, I don't know, 20th game of rummy, perhaps. I have not been counting. Thoughts are chasing around my brain like rats. Questions like, what is going to happen? When will they come? What will happen when the police get here? Erin glances up at the clock on the mantelpiece above the stove. I can tell that she is feeling the same way I am.
One more round, she says, and then I'll figure out something for supper. They should be there by now.
If they made it.
The words hang unspoken in the air as Erin begins to deal.
It is more to drive the unsaid doubts away than because I really want to know that I say it. Topher said you were in an avalanche. What was it like?
Erin looks up. I have caught her by surprise, and for a second her face is unguarded, horribly vulnerable. She looks like I have punched her. For a moment I regret asking her, but then she composes herself. She deals out the last few cards before she speaks.
I was. 3 years ago. It was...
She stops, looks down at the remainder of the deck in her hand.
It was the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
I'm sorry, I say. Then something occurs to me. Even counting this weekend. She gives a laugh at that, a shaky, mirthless one, and nods.
Yes, unbelievably, even counting this weekend. I can't explain how awful it was. The noise, the shock,
the sense of powerlessness. She falters as if she's struggling to find the words.
I thought that it would have made it worse, you know, being caught up in the same horror all over again. But in a strange way, I think I've been expecting it to happen. Like I escaped the mountain once, so it would come back for me.
She stares into the darkness. She is facing me, so it should feel like she is staring at me, but I have the odd feeling that she is not, that she is looking through me, as if I am not there. It gives me a strange sensation, as if I am already gone. Is that when you got your... I can't say it. I just touch my face with my fingers and she nods. Yes, I cut my face on something in the fall. Probably my own ski. And is that why you left uni? I ask. And she nods very slowly.
Yes. I can't really explain why. Even now, I felt like I'd become a different person. Do you know what I mean?
I nod too. I know exactly what she means. I have the impression that she is talking about this perhaps for the very first time.
I had to dig him out.
Her voice is barely above a whisper. I have to strain to hear it.
I wasn't carrying a GPS locator. I had to dig out my boyfriend to activate his beacon, knowing he was already dead.
She looks down, cuts the pack, deals the first card into the pickup pile, moving mechanically all the while.
Suddenly, I do not want to talk about this anymore. I wish I had never asked the question. After all, I have my own secrets, my own subjects I do not want to discuss. What if Erin asks me about my past in return? What if she brings up Snoop again, about why I left? What if she asks about the friends I don't have? The schoolmates who bullied me for 14 years, about the family I have cut myself off from. I hear again my father's slurring voice, my mother's sobs. I taste blood. I am chewing my cuticles again. I stick my hands in the pockets of my jumpsuit. But Erin does not ask about any of these things. She seems to be somewhere else completely, somewhere very far away. When she speaks, her voice has a strange quality to it. It is like a confession. It was my fault, you see,
she says. She picks up her cards. Her hands are trembling a little.
I suggested we went off-piste skiing. I was the one who wanted to do it. I killed them.
She swallows.
That changes a person. She looks up at me, as if expecting me to understand. I have the most peculiar urge to take her hand and tell her that I know how she feels. But that would be crazy, so I don't. Instead, I look down at my own cards. I pick up a three of hearts and discard a jack.
"Your move," I say.
Erin. Snoop ID Little Mai. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers 10.
I don't know what made me spill my past to Liz like that. It was the strangest thing. I've never talked to anyone about that time, not my parents, not Will's parents. Even the coroner and the search and rescue team only wanted the bare facts, not to hear about my bewilderment and grief. It's not that I didn't have the chance. My mother urged me to see a therapist, and I lost count of the number of friends who called me up saying, "If you need to talk, I'm only a phone call away." But I didn't want to talk. I didn't want to be that person, an object of pity, a victim. Because I know how Topher and the others must feel, in a way, for I felt it too. And that's the thing I have never told anyone. That in the minutes and hours I spent searching for Will and Alex after the avalanche, it wasn't terror or fear that was uppermost in my mind, but a kind of shocked disbelief that this had happened to me, to us. I was not this person. I was not the person terrible things happened to. That was other people, other families. I was golden, slipping through life on a charm, insulated by the security of my family, my own good looks, and the luck of having found Will's love. Because yes, that was luck, all of it, and I knew it. But it was also how it was supposed to be, because I was supposed to be lucky. And now, suddenly, that luck had turned. And after it did, I found that I couldn't stand to be there with the people still walking in that perpetual golden sun, while I lived in a place that was black with guilt and grief. I couldn't stand to see the pity in their eyes. It's almost completely dark in the living room now, and when I walk across to the clock over the mantelpiece, I see that it's getting on for 6 p.m. Danny and the others should have been at O Montagna about 2 hours ago. It's possible they could be starting back. It's possible they have managed to contact the police and a chopper is on its way. Possible, not certain. Possible. It's equally possible the road is trashed and they are still trudging across icy rubble. Or, O Montagna was empty and shut up. God, the possibilities are going to send me mad. I don't know why, but with Danny and the others gone, it feels like the atmosphere of the chalet is closing around me and Liz. I can feel the weight of the snow pressing against the roof and the walls. Feel the tons and tons still resting on the mountainside, waiting for another trigger. I can feel the darkness seeping through the rooms and corridors. I know what the edge of endurance feels like, because I passed it once before. Sitting frozen on a cold mountainside with the dead body of my lover, not knowing whether help was going to come. I passed it, and I survived. I came back to safety, back to normality. But there are times when I feel myself being dragged back across that line,
into a place where nothing matters anymore. Where every heartbeat drags you closer to the edge. And I think I'm going to fall into the abyss again. And this time, I won't be able to claw my way out. When I shut my eyes, I can see his face. Will's face. Cold and white as marble. And peaceful. So terribly peaceful.
Erin.
The voice comes from very far away. I shake my head.
Erin.
I open my eyes. Liz is standing in front of me, looking anxious.
Erin, are you okay? Should we get something to eat?
I force myself to smile.
Yes, sure.
Come through to the kitchen and we'll see what we can find. I lead the way, limping, and Liz follows me into the chilly, darkened cavern of the kitchen, looking around her wonderingly as we enter, as if it's an Aladdin's cave, rather than a very ordinary professional kitchen. There's a tin of cassoulet here, I say, trying to read the label in the dim light. It's extremely cold away from the fire, and my teeth are trying to chatter. At least I think it's cassoulet. It could be confit de canard. It's hard to tell. Will that do?
Sure,
Liz said. She's still looking at me like she's concerned.
Are you all right, Erin?
I'm fine, I'm just worried about Danny. I keep hoping we'll hear something. Liz nods, and I realise she must be as worried as me. She's just hiding it better under that calm, stolid exterior. I find myself wondering what she's thinking, and when the tin, it was cassoulet, is decanted into a pan and warming on top of the wood-burning stove in the living room, I pluck up my courage to ask her the question I've been pondering, but not quite daring to ask. Liz, what do you think happened? To Ava, I mean. Her face crumples, and I realise she is holding back the unthinkable just as hard as I am.
I don't know. I've been thinking and thinking. I can't believe any of it is true. It doesn't seem real. I keep wondering if Ava was just in an accident, but then what about Elliot and Annie?
What indeed?
What do you think Annie meant?
I say, stirring the beans slowly, feeling the heat of the fire at my face and the chill cold of the room at my back. When she said she wasn't there. Or was it I didn't see her? I can't remember now, and that fact bothers me. I hear the rustle of waterproof fabric as Liz shrugs.
I don't know. I keep going over and over it in my head. I thought at first she must have been talking about Ava, but it makes no sense. She was there, on the slope. I saw her too.
Could it have been someone at the top?
I'm struggling to remember the exact wording now. Fuck. This could be important, and I can't remember. I'm wondering, when she got to the top of the bubble lift, was someone already missing, someone other than Ava? Someone who had already skied after her?
But who? Liz says.
There weren't that many women left at the top. I'd already gone down in the bubble. The two women left at the top were Tiger, in which case it seems very odd that she would report what Annie said, and Miranda. But she had no opportunity to go after Ava. She went down in the bubble with Annie.
Maybe she didn't. My heart is suddenly thumping. Maybe that's what Annie remembered, that Miranda wasn't in the lift. It's easy to get confused. After all, there's a shuffle of bodies at the top. People heading for one telecabine, it's full, they go for another.
Maybe that's what Annie realised, that Miranda never got on the lift.
What are you saying?
Liz looks uneasy. Her brows behind the thick glasses are knitted together, and in the darkness I hear the crack, crack, crack of her knuckles as she nervously flexes her fingers. Maybe she's a better skier than she's letting on. It's quite easy to pretend to be worse than you are. Maybe she peeled off when everyone else was getting on the lift, and instead of going down the bubble, she followed Ava down La Saussière.
I guess, Liz says slowly.
She looks troubled. I'm ladling the cassoulet out into two bowls when I realise something. If it's true, if what I'm guessing is correct, then I've sent Danny off with a killer. And my heart clutches like someone has put it in a vice. Because yes, it's true, there are two of them and one of her. But the path to O Montagne passes along some pretty treacherous stretches. How hard would it be to wait until someone was close to the edge and then give a little shove? I have no proof of any of this, I remind myself desperately. It's just a theory. It's just a theory. But my throat is constricted and my stomach is closed and sick. And suddenly I can't face eating the fast-cooling mess of beans and meat in front of me. I feel ill with the force of what I may have done. Because I told him to go. With my instinct to organise, my certainty that I know what's best for others, I told Danny to go out into the snow alone with Miranda and Carl. Is it true? Have I sent another friend to his death?
Liz. Snoop ID, Anon 101. Listening to Offline. Snoopscribers 1.
Erin hardly touches her supper. She has gone from being professional and friendly to something quite different in the space of about half an hour. I am at a loss to understand it. When I ask her about it, she just mutters something about being worried about Danny, but I am not sure if that is completely true. I eat most of her portion as well as my own. Then I get up and grope my way through to the kitchen to rinse the bowls under the cold tap. There is no point in trying to wash up. We are past things like that. This is starting to feel like survival. But when I turn the tap, nothing happens. I try the other. Still nothing. When I get back into the living room, Erin is hunched over, staring into the fire. I sit beside her, gingerly flexing my knee, though it's feeling a lot better than it was. "We've got a problem," I say. She looks up as if startled at the sound of my voice.
"What? What did you say?"
"We've got a problem," I repeat. "The water isn't working. I think the pipes have frozen." "Fuck." She closes her eyes and rubs her face as if she's trying to wake herself from a nightmare, which I suppose in a way she is. "Well, there's nothing we can do except sit tight. Danny and the others must be there by now. We just have to make it until morning. If we can manage that without freezing to death."
Her words are unsettling. The more so because I realise that even with my snowsuit on, the chalet is almost unbearably cold now. My breath in the kitchen was a cloud of white. Upstairs must be sub-zero.
"Maybe, should we sleep down here?" I ask.
I guess. Yes, I suppose it makes sense.
"I'll go and get my bedding," I say, making up my mind. Erin nods.
"I'll make the sofas up into beds. They fold out."
I'm almost out of the room when she says, "Liz," and I look back, expectantly, wondering what she's about to say. "Yes?" "Liz, I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for staying here with me, and I'm sorry it turned out like this."
"It's okay," I say. But somehow the words are hard to say. There is something in my throat, an unexpected kind of lump. "It's okay. It's not your fault." And then I turn and hurry into the lobby and up the